Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever and whenever you might be listening here. This is Shag and Flies, and I am your co-host, Zach Hayes, coming to you, as you can probably tell, a few days late, because both Ben and myself were out of town this past week, and we just didn't have the time or capacity to get a guest lined up. That's partially because, you know, as y'all know, all six of you, we tend to run a pretty long podcast, and we noticed that there seemed to be a lot of really great moments with our super cool, interesting guests that just get buried super duper deep into these episodes, because we know that even over multiple sittings, a 3-hour podcast can be a lot to take in, and Lord knows I don't remember everything that's said in these episodes, much less y'all. So, we decided for this week to take some of our best late show moments from episodes 1 through 7 and line them all up for you just to, you know, knock out some airspace in case you missed them the first time, because there's a lot of airspace out there. We talked to a pretty wide selection of folks over our first 7 episodes, so there are lots of hidden gems of different varieties, which include Alex Fast and Chris Towers dropping highly divergent opinions on the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We had Janice Scurio had some interesting things to say about Peloton and had a great time speculating with us about Tyler Glasnow's hair products. Shelley Verstrait, after she taught us how to pronounce her name, enlightened us about cereal milk, which you're about to find out about if you don't know already, and I'm really trying to try. There was also the time that Michael Ahedo literally called the cops on himself, which, if you know anything about Michael Ahedo and the way that, listen to the segment, among other things. Sungmin Kim, amazing guest, had some really cool, deep thoughts about Tinder, which I wouldn't have thought was possible until he started airing them out, among quite a few other things. So, anyway, without further ado, I hope you enjoy some of these deep cuts from the early Shag and Flies archives, and we will be back with you in just a few days. Enjoy!
Remember the auto bar? The Auto Bar. I used to go to a bunch of hardcore shows there.
Yep. They had some great metal shows.
Yes. So the Auto Bar down in Baltimore.
That's so funny. Yeah. Is that still around? Is that gone?
I doubt it. I doubt it. Yeah.
I'd be surprised. So keeping in the thread of music, you're a huge David Bowie fan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what is it about Bowie that connects with you so much?
He is unabashedly himself. He was never afraid to be whatever he wanted to be. He was constantly dedicated to his craft and his vision uncompromisingly. He was not afraid to fail in that way. And he did something that no other musician is ever going to be able to do. No one's ever going to be able to have that many personas and personalities and then have a 40 or 50 year career and then go from being an avant-garde pop artist to someone that revered jazz musicians wanted to play with, to someone who, you know, was playing with like Nigel Godrich and like all these great Detroit soul artists, you know, going on MTV talking about how black artists aren't getting enough play.
That's a great clip.
Yeah, it's an amazing clip. And I just think that, like, he's obviously, you know, I respect that so much about him. And there are certain songs of his that, you know, I'm a huge Nina Simone fan, and I think his Wild as the Wind is an atrocity and an affront to music. And I don't have a problem, like, even though I have a tattoo of him literally on my body, like, he's going to have songs that I don't love of his. But yeah, I just think the fact that he could defy genre the way that he did, and then also, like, really dive into the sort of Lynchian, I'm going to make it express myself and I'm not going to see a need to explain myself. You know what I mean? Like, and also just that final chapter of releasing Black Star and then not telling anyone that he was dying and then passing away and having all these clues in the music about it. And just so, like, yeah, it just, man. Yeah. He just something about him. And then the music, of course, aside all that, the music is amazing.
Yeah. So speaking of the music, all right, I need to hear favorite Bowie album, your least favorite Bowie song, and give me a underrated Bowie song, a deep cut that you don't think gets enough appreciation.
Yeah. Okay. My deep cut is Breaking Glass off of Low. It's a really quick song. It's only like 2 minutes, and it's really haunting. It's really haunting to me. He says, like, he says, "Baby, I've been breaking glass in your home again. Listen," and this weird Brian Eno synth comes in, and it's such a striking chord and progression that it's like, it's such a terrifying thing to say to someone, like, "Baby, I've been breaking glass in your home again. Listen," like, that just really freaks me out. Yeah. I love that. My least favorite is there is like a whole period of like the mid 90s. You know, there's some good stuff with Trent Reznor, but a lot of it's like, all right. But I really do not like his Nina Simone's Wild as the Wind cover. I just don't think it's great. And then the album changes. So I don't want to be the jerk who goes with esoteric for esoteric sake. I do love Low. I do love Lodger, but
yeah,
I fell in love with Ziggy Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Like, I mean,
yeah, that would be mine too.
You can't not. I mean, it's just, it blows your mind. The first time I heard 5 years is probably still my favorite David Bowie song. It's just, it's amazing. It's a great way to start an album, and it's a great song.
Oh my God. Yeah. And the guitar solo and Moon Age Daydream.
Totally.
Just, yeah. You have to crank that up so loud.
Yeah,
that's an incredible album. Also, true or false, Carlos Alomar is one of the most underrated guitarists ever.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. It's just so a great pairing.
On like Scary Monsters and Super, like,
yes.
So good.
True or false, David Bowie was not happy with any of the sounds the Babies were making for the Labyrinth soundtrack, so the sound of the Baby's voice is David Bowie.
I believe it.
Yeah, 100%. True. It is true. He is the sound of the baby on the Labyrinth. Yes.
I love that.
That's so
I loved hearing that you're a bassist too. Mm-hmm. My pride and joy over here is a 5-string jazz bass that I got for my 14th birthday. So on that note, I have two questions for you. Is what is your favorite bass to play? If you have instruments, like, do you have a favorite? And who is your favorite bassist anywhere out in the world?
Yeah, there was a great, I don't have it. I have a 4-string, a 5-string, and a 6-string, but there's a Music Man Stingray that was really great when I was a kid that I really loved to play. Anything with 24 frets, I always wanted to play 24 frets, didn't like 22, didn't like 21.
So how many times did you play the intro to For Whom the Bell Tolls over and over
again? I mean, to be honest, if I was picking up a bass, it was always Flea. Flea was, that was it. Like, Flea, the first time I heard Around the World blew my mind. And then that was my introduction to bass. So he's always going to be my favorite. But then from there, some of the other ones I love, Victor Wooten, Les Claypool, obviously Jaco Pastorius. Ryan Martin from Mudvayne is, I just think, a prodigious. But because he's in a new metal band, people don't really pay attention to him. And then, you know, the Brothers Johnson and all the great stuff that they did with Michael Jackson and their own stuff. There's a lot of like 70s dudes. I really grew to have an appreciation for Pino Palladino. I didn't really like him growing up because I thought he was too simple, but now I kind of appreciate how simple he is. I think those are my big ones.
It's great. I'm here for all of the Jaco Pastorius love, and I'm hoping this isn't the only appearance he makes on this podcast somehow or another. But
I would be surprised. But
we'll see.
So. Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised you didn't mention Geddy Lee in there.
Yeah, you know, I love Geddy Lee, and I have an appreciation for him. But he wasn't the one that when I was a kid, I was like, I listened to him, and I was like, man, this is amazing. But I never sat down and wanted to do Rush. It's funny because my introduction to Rush was
that's a really
good Primus song. Maybe it's a great one. First music question I want to ask, and I just want to give you a moment to expand on this take because it is very interesting to me. You have said that the Red Hot Chili Peppers are Generation X's Eagles. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, I don't like either one of them all that much. I think they're fine. They're super, super popular in a way that I just don't get. They are, I think, the individual pieces of both bands. They have like some really, really great musicians that just kind of leave me like feeling a little empty. Like, I know Flea is this incredible bass player.
Yeah.
But when I think of, and I play bass and I think a lot about bass, it's one of the things that I really like connect to with music. But when I think about like my favorite bass parts or my favorite bass players, like, he never comes up. And it's one of those things where it feels so flashy and there's a lot of technical skill, but it's just like, I don't want to say there's no emotion to it, because that would be totally unfair, but it's just like, I prefer a more melodic bass style, I guess.
Slap and pop ain't for you.
You and me, like, we are in the car together right now, because I cannot tell you how many times I have thought the same thing about Flea, where I'm like, he is clearly very, very good at bass. Like,
yeah.
Very, very good at it. But it almost becomes a cliche of like, yeah, Flea's good at bass. We know. You hear a Red Hot Chili Peppers song and you're like, yeah, Flea, we get it. We know. It's like for a guitar, it's like Yngwie Malmsteen.
Yeah.
Yngwie Malmsteen is an incredible guitarist, but every single song you listen to just shred like crazy. You're just like, yeah, Yngwie, we get it. You can do sweeps. We know. Thank you. And to me, it's like watching someone do complex math calculations in their head. It's like, cool. Like, that is technically impressive.
And I think that, like, that comparison is probably a little unfair to Flea, because he is a very funky player, and like, it's not like robotic. It just, I have a different style. And also my thing with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, their albums are way too long. I love Californication. That was a really big album for me growing up. It doesn't need to be like all of their albums are like 70 minutes long. And I've always felt like it was just like, well, we can make CDs and CDs can hold 75 minutes. So we might as well. And it's like, the perfect length for an album is like 42 minutes. And so you got to have a really compelling reason to go to like 65 minutes. And their albums are so full of filler. I don't dislike them, but I don't dislike the Eagles the way a lot of people do. I think the Eagles have some really great songs. I just never feel the need to listen to them.
Interesting.
I buy that. I buy that completely. No, that makes perfect sense to me as someone who is like neither an aficionado of neither the Eagles nor the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but is like, you know, well enough versed in both. I see that. I'm curious who are some of your favorite. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, so like for the Eagles, there are some Eagles tunes. Like they do a great cover of the Tom Waits song Old 55 that is beautiful. I mean, it's I love that song and that whole Tom Waits' first whole album. But they take Old 55 and make it what I think Tom Waits didn't know it needed to be. Like, it just becomes this country tune, and I mean, there's no better like you know, bar belting it out piano bar song than Desperado, in my opinion.
They got some, you know.
But yeah, I get it. Album way, you know, for a full album, for me, maybe Hotel California, the whole album, because it's got a lot of great tunes on it. But I do get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I also think like Joe Walsh is slightly overrated. We can leave that at another.
I mean, look,
I'm with you. He's also a total jerk.
Oh, okay. We can.
I mean, they're all. They also, I think that the Eagles just kind of get a bum rap. For one, just like they went into country music, but not in like a cool way, like the Stones did. But they actually like, and like country music is super uncool, especially among people who, you know, are serious.
Well,
about
they kind of started. They kind of started in country music since they were Linda Ronstadt's backing band.
I always thought they started more in like that. That like, I don't know, Jackson Browne, like
Sure. Like, yeah. Well, so that was kind of more country. I would say once Joe Walsh joined the group, they were way less country and a lot more just kind of California rock.
Yeah.
But they started, I mean, Glenn Frey, before he left the group, he was writing country tunes and, yeah. But yes, very much Jackson. They even did a Jackson Brown song in Take It Easy. But they were working with Linda Ronstadt first, and they kind of took that Linda Ronstadt pop country sound, yeah. sort of like, you know, Flying Burrito Brothers, Graham Parsons kind of feel, yeah. and then took that and added some California to it. And then, yeah, drifted away from country once they hit Hotel California, there's no, you know, country there at all. But the first couple albums, for sure, they had. But I think they get a bad rap because of the Big Lebowski. I think that's a big part of it.
That was the other, and the like Hell Froze Over tour. Like I just think it, like a lot about them rubs people the wrong way in ways that I think the way they've done the reunion and then we're breaking up and then we're reuniting thing, like that is obnoxious, and I get why people dislike them for that.
Well, and Joe Walsh is also obnoxious.
Yeah, and then the Big Lebowski thing is just unfair. Like, it's a good line, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've had a long day and I hate the Eagles. Like, that makes sense. That, I feel like that appeals to something in all.
Strikes a chord. So I also grew up playing the bass, too. We talked about this with Fast a few weeks ago. So who are your favorite bassists?
I mean, the Beatles were like oxygen in my household growing up. So I just think, like, Paul McCartney is not at all the flashiest bass player. In terms of technical skill, there are hundreds of better.
He played with a pick. It's like a cardinal sin of people who really give a shit about bass.
but just as a musician playing bass, I think he his ability to serve the songs and like the sound, like the way, you know, starting in like the mid 60s with like Paperback Writer, when he started playing on the Rickenbacker and they started boosting the bass sound, and just like, first of all, one, it just like changed the way people thought about the instrument. Like, people weren't viewing the bass as like a lead or semi lead instrument in that way before. But he was just such a melodic player. You know, like the bass line in Something is just like,
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, like, Pete Townsend, or not Pete Townsend, John Entwistle is, like, the technically flashy bass player, he's probably the one I go to, because I think he mixes melodicism with the technical skill. And The Who are such an interesting band because the bass and drums are kind of the lead instruments. Like, if you listen to, like, Happy Jack, Keith Moon is kind of playing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He's playing, like, lead drums, basically. And
You
Won't Get Fooled Again, like the bass in that song is kind of like the lead, like that's
driving. And that's not even mentioning the bass in My Generation.
Yes,
that's solo. That was going through my head, so the entire
ridiculous.
Yeah, that's when he apparently originally wanted to play that with a pick. That was his style, but he couldn't hold on to the pick, or the pick kept cracking because he was playing it so fast that he had to play with it. I'm pretty sure that's the story on that.
That's baller. That is some baller that's shit right there.
John Entwistle is a great choice. I like that a lot. That's awesome.
Like, I can't even remember the name of the bassist for Radiohead, but I feel like he's super underrated. Wilco is my band, and their bassist is really good. John Stirratt. Plays a very like melodic Paul McCartney style of bass. And then
that's a good list.
I'll throw out Paul Simonon from The Clash. You know, he actually, the first couple of albums, he didn't really, I think they just kind of wrote the bass lines for him, because I think he was new to the instrument. I think London Calling is the first
food
album
recommendation. Started, like, so that could be like the food you like to eat, or a restaurant, or like really anything related to food.
If you ever get a chance to eat at like an authentic Puerto Rican restaurant, Mofongo. It's like a mashed fried plantains. It's like fried plantains that are mashed together, then usually fried again. Usually served with like I guess it would be kind of like an au jus, kind of like a sauce, like a broth, usually like maybe seafood or roasted pork. One of my favorite.
That's how it's pronounced.
Yeah. One of my favorite comfort foods. I think you can also get it at like Dominican places, but it's, you know, the,
could you spell that? Sorry.
M-O-F-O-N-G-O.
Mofongo. Okay.
Mofongo. And it's, it's one of my,
that sounds amazing.
It's one of my childhood, like, comfort foods. It's a lot of garlic, a lot of fried. It's really good.
That sounds fantastic. Oh,
I
yeah.
I think that might be my favorite full count recommendation we've gotten so far. I'm hyped to check this out.
That's awesome. Next one is movies and or TV.
But yeah, it's a lot of stuff from like, you know, bad 90s humor, but even there's some stuff like there's whole, and I apologize if I'm like ruining anyone's experience here. Just it is what it is, but it's like there's whole episodes based off of gay jokes and stuff. And it's like,
yeah,
and it's one thing to be in like the '90s, but like even for like 1995, 96, I always think it's like, I always characterized it as like Seinfeld for people who never met a Jewish person. and like way less funny too. Like if the thing about Friends is that, and Ben, having watched the show, I think you can like disagree with me, but every single plot line on that show ever could be solved in 5 minutes if all of the characters just weren't compulsive liars about everything.
Yeah. So there's a great series of YouTube videos in which it is episodes of Friends without the laughter. Without the studio laughter.
Dude. Yeah. So bad.
And all of a sudden, Friends gets real creepy and yeah. scary and sad. Because all of a sudden you're like, oh, these are bad people.
Yeah.
I will say I recognize there are a lot of problems with Friends, and that's one of the reasons I'm not like a diehard Friends fan. I think Friends is funny and it's enjoyable to watch. It's a pixie stick of TV. It's just pure sugar, and I'll just like pour it down for pure enjoyment. But like, I don't get anything out of it. But there are definitely a lot of problems with it. But at the same time, like I said, I love How I Met Your Mother, and How I Met Your Mother is just like trying to do Friends again. So,
and all those 90s sitcoms, they're just really, first of all, no diversity of not only of like race, but like of thought, like.
Very little,
you know, it's really just gender. But they're all just like really privileged, and like it's like, oh, you all like live in I think what New York, and like
Manhattan.
You don't,
they have this big ass room, and you work at a coffee shop. Remember,
it's rent controlled. It's rent controlled. Oh. That's why they can afford it.
Like, it's like you don't appear to like really work. I don't know. So it just kind of it legitimately like grosses me out.
Well, and there's a lot of there are studies that have been done on like what the preponderance of that kind of TV and what that kind of representation in TV does over time in terms of like reifying cultural norms that go a long way to doing like really crappy things.
Oh, I mean,
but that's like, we could go on a whole different podcast about that. It's two right now. No one's listening anymore.
Like, No. 90 sitcoms like that. I mean, you want to talk about a sitcom that like appeals to the white family, like Home Improvement is like the,
oh my God, dude.
I mean, I watched a lot of Home Improvement.
Let's take things a slightly different direction now. So you live in the state of Washington.
I do.
And I live in the state of Illinois. This is going to be a boohoo for you, Ben, over there in Maryland. But in Illinois and Washington, there are certain things that are legal that aren't legal in other places. I'm just going to have to ask you, because you're like very well documented as a sampler of different things. What is your favorite kind of edible?
So there are some edibles called Pioneer Square edibles here in Seattle. There's these little gummies. I think they're like little indica gummies, but essentially they're just like little gummies, and they taste like amazing for an edible. Like, I actually kind of like the taste of like the THC.
When you get that little bit, I don't even know how to describe it.
It's like kind of comforting in a way, which is weird because, you guys are probably going to want to hear about this after I say this, but I think just those little gummies. I like cookies and stuff too, but I will never drink the drinks. I will say that. There are drinks like CBD, like sure, but THC, I've heard of someone who chugged one and he had a bad time, which segues into what I was going to say is one time I called the cops on myself. When I was high.
Okay, yeah, explain that one. What? How does that happen? So
I'm sure you've noticed by now, but I have a habit of just giving way too many details and stories. So I guess I'll tell the story. I'll try to be like kind of succinct. Basically, let's see. I was just like, I was still in undergrad, was celebrating just like being done with my semester, which was really hard. It was like when I first started taking school really seriously, was going to celebrate with a cookie. And it was my only day until for like another week that I had no school and I had no work. So I was like, I'm celebrating. Didn't have anyone there with me. I was just like, I'm going to watch some White Collar. Is that what it's called? Yeah. With Neil Caffrey. Yeah.
The USA show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like USA shows, but anyways, I was like, I'm going to watch some White Collar.
They're the best. They're the best. Psych, okay. Monk.
Psych. I was going to say.
Okay, that's true. Psych. Okay. Psych's one of my faves. Is that Mauricio in there?
Dule Hill is just one of my favorite actors of all time, and I don't even know what happened.
You mean Guy Buttersnaps?
Yeah.
Do you mean Scoony U-Turn Sailor?
Okay.
Do you mean MC Clap Your Hands?
Oh my. That's my favorite running joke on that show, and they have a lot of running jokes.
There was a while where I was obsessed. I was obsessed with finding the pineapple, like for a while.
Dude, I never find them. I've probably seen four.
Have you seen the second movie that came out last year?
I haven't seen either of the movies. I need to see them.
First movie, we should watch it together. Yeah, man. I haven't seen the second movie. The first movie is good. It's just like a long episode of Psych. Second movie I haven't seen. They basically did the second movie so that the guy who plays Lassiter could have a bigger part because he had a stroke.
I heard he looked like he had a stroke in the first one.
Yeah, he popped up for a second and you could tell like he was looking rough. And but he's better now. And they had the second.
It's good.
Movie is called Lassie Comes Home. So it's mainly focused on him, but yeah, I still need to see the second one, but great show. But anyways, you call the cops on yourself.
So I'm gonna
celebrate tonight. And so I just started eating it and I remember like finishing it and I was like, crap, like it's like 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. I was like, I need to. It had been probably 45 minutes or an hour or something. And I was like, I need to get high because if I don't, you know, so I went to the weed store, they had good deals. So I got another, maybe like one or two, just to preface, I didn't eat both of them, but went back home, ate another three quarters. And I was just sitting there and I was like, man, I'm not really like, I'm still not high. So I went to the gas station, grabbed some snacks. I still vividly remember grabbing powdered donuts, a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and I think a family size bag of Chipotle's. So I get back home, I'm watching White Collar. I'm like, man, this still, like, I kind of feel it, but like, it's still not hitting. And I vividly remember eating the Lay's and just being like, I'd eaten a lot of all three, but just like being deep into the bag. And then just being like, oh, whoa, I'm pretty good right now. And I'd been having what I'll describe as like heart jolts recently. Man. And it was basically just like this zap that felt like a pretty sharp pain just like in my chest area. And sometimes it would like double me over. Like I would just be like, oh, and it would just go away. And so I had already been paranoid about my heart. Like I'd already had bad experiences smoking or eating edibles, whatever. And so many times I've had the experience where my heart starts beating really fast. And I was like, it's okay, man. Like it's chill. But the added the added like being too high, like I don't know if it was clear, but that trip that I went on, I was obviously high given the snacks that I bought. But given just the intensity, being home alone, and just the added paranoia, I started to get really high, and my heart was beating to the point where I was like really, really paranoid. So I looked back at a text that my mom had sent me just because I told her about my heart jolts, and she was like, "Well, if you're paranoid, like call 911." So I pulled up trusty old Google, and I was like, "Heart attack symptoms," and I was like, "Oh, yep, all me." And I was like, "Okay, well, I'm having a heart attack." I called 911. And I was just like pacing back and forth because I was really paranoid and obviously not thinking straight, but I was like, if I stop walking, like I'm going to pass out and die. So I walked outside sopping wet socks, like it was raining, and I'm just out there like a freaking Omarion icebox video. And I'm on the phone with them and I'm like, "Hey, I think I'm having a heart attack." And they're like, they're like, "Okay, like explain your symptoms, blah, blah, blah." And I explained whatever, like, I don't even know why I thought I was having a heart attack. Like, I don't even know if people's hearts start beating hard when they're having heart attacks, but they're like, "Okay, count your heart rate for us." And I was like, "Okay, 1, 2, 3. And they're like, "Okay, like, this is not like working." And they're like, "Okay, just like, say we're at, we'll come to you, whatever." And I was like, "Actually, I'm going to walk up the street." And they're like, "What? Like, sir, please stay where you are." And I was like, "No, I'm going to walk up the street." And
you're having a heart attack. Stop walking.
Okay. So I think that, I don't know if it's just for me. I feel like marijuana, when you're having a capital B, capital T bad time, it actually mimics kind of psychotic symptoms. So I get really paranoid. Like, I think that paranoia is just kind of like baby schizophrenia, like baby psychosis. I start having these associations where I think that they're like meaningful. So I thought if I walked towards my neighbor's house with Christmas lights, that I would be walking towards the light. I thought it was like symbolic of like, "Oh, I'm gonna die." So I started walking up the street, and then once I got up back up there, I turned around and I hallucinated that there are like people in my yard, like looking over like my dead body, basically. Ended up getting back to my house, super wet socks, just plopped down on the couch, called my friend. I was like, "Hey man, having a heart attack. Bye." And I see like the flashing lights. So like I basically open the door and I'm like ready to like hop in the ambulance and go. And they're like, "Sir, please sit down." What eventually happened is they hooked me up to like an EKG, like six people in this room. And once they all came in, I was like, "Man, I'm one of those guys. Like, I'm not having a heart attack. I'm freaking..."
You just knew, right?
I'm that guy, you know, I think the most famous example is that like cop that took the, you know, evidence and ate the weed brownies with his wife. But my heart was beating 176 beats per minute. And I think
Yeah.
So that's, it was beating really fast objectively. But I was just having a panic attack. And they were just like, "So if we thought that you were like gonna die, we would take you to the hospital." And they like made it really clear that like, "You're not gonna die." And they were just like, "Is there anyone that can like come hang out with you?" And I was like, "Yeah, Jill will come hang out with me." So Jill was working, and I was like, "Hey, can you come over and like watch TV with me?" Like, the paramedics were making me. So we watched some Bob's Burgers, and I chilled out after a while. But that was one of two times, both weed induced, in which I thought, like, legitimately thought in my heart of hearts that I was going to die.
Dude, so, that's a weird sensation.
I still dabble too. I don't know why, but you've probably seen my high
sensation, tweets. The sensation where you feel like you might die.
Oh, I know. But I still eat edibles, like, to this day.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm a human and dumb.
I've never had the, like, the thought I was going to die of paranoia. I have been, like, the Quaalude scene in Wolf of Wall Street. Like, laying on my carpet, swimming through air type stuff. But I've never gotten super paranoid, which is I guess I should be thankful for that experience.
It's not great.
That was not your favorite edible.
Don't do it at home. This sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. First recommendation, and it can be anything. It can be an obvious one. It can be an obscure thing. Whatever comes to your head. Very first category is going to be books.
Oh, man. Am I allowed to get multiple?
If you want to, yeah.
Let it rip.
Oh, man. Speaking my love language. Number one, for fiction, Perfume, Patrick Susskind. It's actually what Scentless Apprentice is about. Oh. It's basically just about this this kid born scentless, but born with, like, a crazy nuanced kind of sense of smell. And so people, it's really like scent matters a lot in this kind of depiction of this world. And so people hate him because he doesn't smell like anything. And he kind of hates people back. And so he kind of just becomes like, I don't know, like a hermit, and he tries to get away from everyone and eventually, like, just can't really do it. And so he seeks out to make everyone love him. And the way to do that is to concoct the perfect scent via perfume. And the way that he makes them is by murdering beautiful women, usually like young women. So it's like a fascinating book, one of the most well-written books I've ever, probably the most well-written book that I've ever read. I think it's adapted from French, Italian, something. So that's my number one fiction. Quick hitters from, is it Dutch?
German.
Or German, yeah. Oh, I'm an idiot. It's adapted from German? Interesting.
That's what I'm getting all of my information today from Wikipedia, so, like...
Yeah, no, I believe it. For nonfiction, number one, The Body Keeps a Score. It's about trauma, and...
That is on my reading list. I need to read that.
It's part of the reason why I wrote that article that I wrote, and it's really informed how I view mental health and how I view trauma. But basically, it's just about how trauma, a lot of it is about how trauma creates a disconnect between your mind and body. Fascinating. The author is a little bit kind of a piece of work. He got fired from his job for being a piece to his whatever you call, not the opposite of superiors. Self-compassion. Underlings.
Subordinates.
Yeah, basically. Self-compassion. We should all be a lot nicer to ourselves. And then probably last is Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. It's about women's sexuality and does a lot of myth busting. And just, I think for anyone that's in a relationship with a woman, whether you are the woman or you're just in a relationship with said woman, it helps to do a lot of, you know, myth busting. It helps explain, like, women anatomy pretty well, and really just serves as, like, almost like a couples counselor in terms of, like, sex and just, like, how to approach stuff. It's really fascinating, and I think people should be required to read it. So those are probably, I might be forgetting an important one, because I have, like, a big five, but those are my books.
Word. I'm gonna have to look all those up that I don't know. Food recommendation number two. That can be like literally anything food related. Can be a dish, a restaurant, a food item, a concept.
Seattle, Washington, hood famous, cafe. There's two of them, but it is Filipino owned. They make the craziest desserts and food. And they're pretty much like 90% of them are like Filipino or Filipino influenced. It like makes me feel at home, and they do like great design work, whatever. One of the owners is half Ben. You might know them. It's kind of obscure, but he is the MC of Blue Scholars.
Blue Scholars. Nah, it doesn't ring a bell.
They're super good. But,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my, I think that's gotta be my number one.
That's awesome. I love it. Next category is movies and or TV.
Friends.
Ooh,
so Friends. Yeah. I've never Friends once is like a must see. That or like said that out loud, but I've definitely thought that in I the past, like growing
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Like we need a film that like portrays the White Sox in a positive light for once, for absolutely once. Yeah. But no, top of the list, like Rick Renteria managing the Chicago professional women's baseball team.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Let me get started on the script right now.
Yeah. Ronald batting third, maybe.
What a sight that would be. All right, this one has nothing to do with baseball, but I didn't get to ask it to Ahedo last week. So if you could sit down and have a conversation with any person in human history, who would it be? And like, it doesn't have to be any specific person, because like, we're not biased towards like, you know, Western modes of history. Like, if you want to talk about, I would love to talk with someone who lived in South America 300 years ago, like 3000 years ago. That's cool too. So like, literally anything, anybody.
Literally.
Describe the universe and give examples, Janice. That's what we want.
I want to talk to an alien from outer space. That is who I want to talk to. Just mainly so I can know, like, is life sustainable on planets other than Earth, and how fast can I get there? Essentially, is what I want to know. I think a realistic answer to that question, like, if not aliens, I mean, like, I would love to talk to an alien, by the way. Okay, if any aliens,
that'd be super cool. Yeah,
from outer space are listening to this podcast and want to talk to me, like, my DMs are open. Slide on in. Like, I would love to talk to you. See, I don't know, someone from like all of human history. Dang,
it's a lot to narrow down. Sometimes it can be just like literally whatever comes to your head. I'm not looking for anything.
I don't know. I have no idea why, but like my brain is just like still like sticking to baseball. But no, like one person that I just really would love to interview is Tyler Glasnow.
He seems like a pretty sweet dude.
He does. He seems like he's really nice.
And I mean, of every person in human history, you know, I think Tyler Glasnow's a great choice.
I want to know about his new slider. Like, I see that he's been throwing it.
It's valuable information.
Yeah,
it's
also good. Is he the most handsome baseball player in the MLB? Because I think he is.
Objectively, yes. I don't know. To me, he's. I feel as if he's a little too textbook good looking.
That's fair. That's fair.
I do think he's good looking, though. I mean, just to get that out of the way.
Every time I see him in like an interview, every time I see him in an interview, I'm just like, God.
Yeah, he's a real life Disney prince.
I want to know what hair product he uses.
He actually talked about that in another podcast that I saw. So apparently, like, it's not like I like watch every Tyler Glasnow podcast, because I mean, like, maybe I do, you know, but that's just between us and like anyone who listens to this podcast. But he said that he uses like whatever shampoo is available, and he also uses a conditioning oil. So
I would love if, like, he has this, you know, he has this great hair, and everyone's like, what hair product do you use? He's like, I don't know, Pert Plus 2-in-1.
Yeah, it's like some 3-in-1 product.
Like it's some, like, Nivea for garbage.
3-in-1, $6.99 at Walgreens.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I love it. All right, I'm very – this is one of my favorite questions to ask, even though we strike out on it constantly. No pun intended. But have you ever seen a ghost – and or had something happen to you that you couldn't really explain, just something weird?
No.
Fuck, man. Come on.
Fine. Whatever. Fine.
Another one. 0 for 5.
No. We've had a couple good.
I don't know. When I was a kid, I used to think that I had the ability to control whether or not the streetlights would come on or not. I was wrong. I don't have that ability. It sounds cool at face value, though. I mean, electrokinesis, right? Like, I can just like make a light come on. Like
the city of Chicago, you can make a whole lot of money that way. I'll tell you. Stand in traffic, be like, you want to go? I can let you go.
Yeah, we had Mikey gave us a great ghost story last time.
It wasn't really a ghost story, was it? Like,
kinda.
I'll give that half credit. We'll say half 0.5 out of 5.
He was literally under the covers in his bed and heard footsteps that weren't there. I think that's a pretty much a ghost story.
Okay, but we asked him, and he also at first said no, though. So he said he didn't believe in ghosts.
Forgot about
he said
that
he didn't
story.
Believe in ghosts, though. So like, where is the?
That's like a textbook ghost story, right?
Yeah, that's
there.
Like very literally a ghost story. He just had forgotten. We triggered some memories for him, like a good therapy session. Oh well, that's okay. Hey, look, at least you weren't like both Alex and Nick were just like no. like idiot. No.
No.
Like ghost.
Please. Whatever. One day, I swear to God, one day we're gonna ask that question. Someone's gonna be like, dude, I've been wanting to tell this story.
Someone's and we're gonna go like, absolutely backwards.
Oh yeah, we're gonna lose our minds because someone's gonna tell this incredible, like, I was leaving my body. And just like something like crazy or something. But oh well, until then, I'm going to ask you, do you have a favorite Muppet?
I don't know. Probably, like, I guess the obvious answer would be Janice.
That's the obvious answer? Okay.
Yeah, she's
I get awesome. It. Okay. Yeah. Took me a second to make the connection.
She's probably like one of the better representatives of like fictional characters with my name. Everyone else sucks.
I was gonna say, I'm trying to think.
What are some of the
Janice's
others
out there?
There's the one from Friends.
Oh. We had a conversation about Friends last.
A long conversation about why Friends is terrible.
It is. Yeah, Friends is absolutely terrible, and then that's one of the reasons why. So she's probably, and she also plays guitar too. There's like nothing cooler than that. So.
Yeah, man, Janice is cool. No, that's actually a great pull, because the obvious answer is like Kermit or Fozzie Bear. I do love Fozzie, but no, I like Janice. That's a good call.
Okay, here's something a little upbeat. So we are now more than 1 year into this global panini. And there's pancetta, everything that starts with
the global poinsettia.
So I literally like wouldn't be on this podcast doing all this stuff for Pitcher List if it wasn't for this pandemic and it hadn't given me all this time to do all this other crap when I lost
Worth
my job
it.
And all this stuff. So, you know, I do think about as crappy as all of this been, there's a lot of things I'm thankful for. So, you know, is there anything that you have grown more appreciative of or thankful for over the past year or so, you know, since our lives have all gone a little sideways?
That's a great question. I definitely feel as if I don't think I would have gotten as serious about baseball writing if it weren't for the pandemic. It was probably because of the pandemic that I was actually able to get into an MLB press box this year, which is absolutely unprecedented. If you would have told me like last year that I would get credentialed access to attend a Major League Baseball game, I would have told you that you were nuts. As like really just incredibly isolating the pandemic can be. I mean, I live alone. I haven't really seen any of my friends in like a good year. I still have managed to develop friendships. I've gotten close to so many people online, So it really makes me look forward to the future. So like as soon as all of this mess is over, as soon as I'm vaccinated, I hope to get vaccinated within the next couple of weeks. Since Illinois announced that everyone in the state over 16 should be able to secure a vaccination, I think like by mid-April, which I think is really great news. So yeah, as soon as I'm vaccinated, yeah, I honestly can't wait to get back out there and just like meet all the people I've been talking to and just like developing relations with like over this past year. So yeah, that's the good thing that I'm taking out of all of this.
No, that's beautiful. I totally agree. I've thought, I'm actually looking forward to whatever kind of Sox Twitter gathering can get together.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
After this is all done.
I am very
excited for a, we usually do a pitcher list meetup, staff meetup every year in New York City. And obviously we canceled the past one, which was the first one I was finally going to be able to make. So I'm very excited to do a pitcherless meetup because we usually will meet up at some bar in Brooklyn, around where Nick lives, just hang out at a bar and talk baseball and have people, you know, pitcherless fans come by if, you know, if they're in the area. And it just, I can't wait to do that. That's going to be a lot of fun whenever that can happen.
I will say while we're on air here though, because I want this on the record. If I ever see White Sox Dave in person, we're boxing. Put that on the record right now. As far as Sox Twitter gatherings go.
None of that made sense to me.
That's okay. Yeah,
that's okay.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you one last question before we get to the final section of the podcast. Tell me about a time when you laughed super hard. It can be the hardest you've ever laughed. It can be something that happened recently. It does not have to be a good story. It's okay. Like just a time when like, you know, you're laughing so hard, you're crying. What happened? Who's there? What's going on?
Oh man. And that almost like started off as a job interview question. Like, oh, tell me about a time.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Tell me about a time where you encountered adversity. How did you handle that?
I wanted to try and say it grammatically. I wanted to try and be grammatically correct because it's a weird sentence to say. Like, tell me about the time in which you laughed the hardest or something. Like, it's just, I don't know. It functionally is kind of weird. So. A time when you laughed super, super hard. It, like I said, again, it does not have to be a good story. Okay. You know, if somebody fell down, somebody farted, like that's fine. Like that's hilarious.
I think we're finding is these, like usually the best answers are the ones that just come to your head first.
The first thing that pops in your head. Yeah.
I guess probably the first thing that came to my head is that In the Brewers article I was writing for Baseball Prospectus, in the 50th percentile, where inferably the Brewers win the NL Central, I wrote that this outcome largely depends on the flatulence of the Cubs and the Cardinals. And like I just thought that sentence was so incredibly hilarious.
I love that.
I think I got like really drunk and I it and I just like fell over laughing.
We all have like, those moments, don't we?
I was just like, fart, I'm farting, hilarious.
I swear to God, there are not many things that are funny forever, but farts are one of those things.
Farts
like
are
I guarantee if you hopped in a time machine and went back to like ancient Greece. Somebody rips a fart at like you know, in Socrates's class or whatever, and like everybody's dying laughing.
Doug, they like, found fart just, jokes at like Pompeii, like yeah, in Mosaic.
Fart jokes, like that, you know, fart jokes, and people falling down forever will be funny.
Right, fart just, jokes, people falling down. I actually find that D's nuts jokes are like absolutely hilarious. Like I will find any time, like any opportunity to drop a good D's nuts joke.
Oh my god.
Probably like the last novel I read was this book called The Son of Good Fortune. And it's a book essentially about this Filipino mom and immigrant, or mom and son, and they're immigrants. So they're dealing with kind of adjusting to life in the United States. And this is kind of like the time in which this book takes place. It's a little ambiguous, but from context clues, it's definitely pre 9/11. So I'm guessing like probably like late 90s, like early 2000s sort of. And so the book is essentially just about life in Northern California as like a new immigrant. And there's lots of like just cultural discussions and discussions about, you know, mother-son dynamics, kind of relationship dynamics as well. The main character ends up falling in love and gets a girl pregnant, and they like run off to some hippie commune. And it's just a very fascinating book. It's been about like 3 months since I've read it, and I really can't stop thinking about it. So that's probably the book I would recommend.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah. This guy was also born on an airplane too, so like his citizenship is kind of up in the air.
No pun intended. The
whole conflict is that both the mom and the son are both undocumented immigrants, so that they're always hiding. They're always like trying to keep a low profile. They've kind of got that whole struggle going on.
Wow, that sounds really cool. Yeah, I like it.
That's a very good one. Yeah. Next one, food recommendation. And that's like literally anything food related, like restaurant, food item, meal, whatever.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'd probably say my go-to food place, like the place that I will never get sick of eating at. There's a restaurant in the north suburbs of Chicago called Pita Inn. It is a Mediterranean restaurant. And like just everything I've had from there is so incredibly good. They're probably most famous for this platter called the business lunch special, which is essentially like any kind of shawarma. Like there's like 3 different types of shawarma. You get like hummus, you get falafel, you get rice, you get couscous. You just get like all of this amazing shit for like it's like this huge serving, and it's only $5. In my opinion, it's like the best deal in all of Chicago.
Which suburb is it in?
There's one in Skokie. There's one in Wheeling. And I think there's like a couple of others too out there. But
Skokie's close enough.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. Sweet. That's cool. I like it. All right. Next one, movies and or TV.
Man. I haven't been watching a lot of movies lately. TV, probably the series I just finished. What did I just finish? The show on Netflix called Lupin. It's in French. It's basically like based on this book series about this guy who's trying to emulate this con artist. It's really short. The episodes go by really fast. I really liked it. I'm really looking forward to season 2. The other show that I watch on a regular basis is RuPaul's Drag Race.
Classic.
Very classic.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, that's great. No, would recommend. Next up is music.
Ooh.
And I also want to ask, while we're thinking about music, I want to ask about the shirt that you're wearing.
Oh, yo, thank you.
Because this is Celine Dion. It's Celine Dion, but like, what is this heavy metal logo? So obviously this is like terrible radio because we're on video, but anybody listening to this is obviously not. But
listening to this has made it this far, do they really care?
Right. For the viewers, and I know they're not viewers, Janice is wearing a t-shirt that says Celine Dion, and it has this logo. I can't even like tell. Yeah. My heart will go on, and it's like a skull and
a pentagram
and like
it's essentially a metal logo.
Is this an officially licensed Celine Dion T-shirt?
Great question. It is not. It is definitely not.
That's hilarious. I love it.
I've been wondering that for like an hour and a half now.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Music recommendation.
All right. Last category. It's my favorite category. Miscellaneous. Anything from your life. This can be an activity, a gadget, a thing you do, literally anything that you would recommend to others. And what I always tell people is that the first thing that pops up in your head is usually the best thing.
Wow. Like this is just so far and wide.
I know. And it's easy to get buried in like, oh, what do I recommend? The first thing that pops in your head, no matter how dumb it may sound to you,
yeah,
that's the one I want to hear.
All right. Well, I've got a pretty dumb one. Looking behind me, probably my favorite purchase in like this whole like mess of a Panini is probably my Peloton. I think it's probably like my favorite thing that I've bought.
Are you part of the Peloton cult?
I probably am, and that's really hilarious because I always used to like clown on Peloton owners and just be like, you have a bike in your house. Like that's weird. Like I go to the gym like a normal person. But then
what
I realized,
is it about the Peloton that you love? Like what's so great about
it? The fact that I could just like jump on that bike and work out whenever I want. So that's cool. And also too, I can just look like a total fool without having an audience. Like it's only my dog that just watches me just like huff and puff on this bike. And like she doesn't care. Like she has no judgment on me. And yeah, the classes are fun. And I don't want to sound like too much like a culty, but like a lot of the times, like the instructors will tell you things like, you know, like you matter. Like you woke up today, be happy. A lot of them like will tell you like, be proud of what your body can do. And it's sort of like, you know, you're absolutely right. And just to hear those things, like when like no one else is saying it around me, like it helps. It really does.
That actually makes so SNL did a Peloton sketch a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that with the negative reinforcement.
But the negative, that makes that sketch make a lot more sense now where they're just like, oh, look who decided to exercise today. Or you're doing okay, you know, for you. that makes it make a lot more sense. But
so is that what it is really with the classes? Because I've always been kind of confused as to what it is with Peloton specifically, rather than just being like, oh, I got a stationary bike. That seems fairly like mundane, but people have made a big deal out of Peloton specifically. Like it's a cult. It's not, there's no stationary bike cult, there's a Peloton cult. So is that what it is, classes? And there's something like really, like, I don't know if special is the right word, but you find those like compelling? And
yeah, so it's dead. They do a lot more than just like the cycling classes. So there's also like strength training. They also do like yoga and all that shit too. And probably the most appealing thing, like especially like in the pansetta age, is that live classes are a thing. So like on my birthday, I made it a point to take a boot camp class because I would know that the instructor would give me a shout out. So and she did. She actually like said my name in the middle of the workout, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm being noticed. Yes, I have validation. So like external validation is so hard to come by, I think, like especially in this day and age. So I definitely like chased it in this context. So to get that, like it's a rush, I have to admit. And of course too, like they keep track of your milestones too. So like every 100 rides, every 200 rides, every 300 rides, like they want to give you credit. So like to get noticed is like a big endorphin rush.
Well, that seems like a good time to mention that this episode of Shaggin' Flies is sponsored by Peloton. use code Shaggin at Peloton.com. No,
Nick,
go buy a Peloton.
Like,
God, yeah, I'd die if it was sponsored by Peloton. My God. We love Peloton. Peloton,
preppy. That's the Annapolis thing.
Vineyard Vines or something like that. I don't know. So, okay. This one I think might be the most controversial, and that is milk and cereal. In which order, if those are things that you consume? Or, like, if you don't, if you were to have a bowl of cereal and milk, which would you put first?
Well, I don't eat cereal anymore, but I do make cereal cakes and use cereal milk.
Oh.
So it's definitely cereal then milk.
Okay. Cereal. Like the milk that has had cereal soaking in it then goes
into... Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What is cereal milk?
Yes, yeah. Cereal milk is basically you pour, you know, milk and cereal and have it kind of like soak for a bit, I guess is the best term. And then you take the cereal out and you put it in the, like I made a Fruit Loop cake the other day. So you use like basically Fruit Loop milk in your cake and it makes it, you know, taste like Fruit Loops.
So are you telling me right now on the 6th of April, 2021 of the year of our Lord, Shelley Verstrait, that you could make potentially a Cinnamon Toast Crunch cake?
I've made a Cinnamon Toast Crunch cake. Actually,
were there shrimp in it?
Oh my God.
Because of that, I made a Cinnamon Toast Crunch cake and I used the Cinnamon Toast Cheerios that kind of look like a shrimp tail. So
this
I had
is the
like,
second time Cinnamon Toast Cheerios has come up on this podcast.
I was literally waiting to say, like, Jake Seeley's head is exploding.
Cut to a shot of Jake Seeley, like, doing karate kicks in the air. That is his, I don't know if you know, but that is Jake's, like, number two cereal all time, I think it was on his list, number two. Because he said that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is amazing, but it gets soggy in the milk. Mm-hmm. But Cinnamon Toast Churros solves that problem by changing the shape of the cereal so it never gets soggy.
Did you put the cereal, like the churro part of the cereal on the cake and stuff as like a decoration type thing, like on the frosting?
Yeah. So on the inside, I made like a Cinnamon Toast Churro Crunch. So I baked some Cinnamon Toast Crunch Churros with sugar, brown sugar, butter, and a little bit of milk powder. So it made like this really kind of crunch crumble. So that's on the inside. And then on the top, I also sprinkled that with some of the churros to kind of make it like play on the shrimp tails.
Sweet baby Jesus, Shelley. That sounds amazing. How far of a drive is it to McKinney? I may be requesting a cake. That sounds incredible. Man, I didn't know you could make cereal cakes, but I guess now that I think about it, you could probably turn anything into a cake. But
like a whole world of possibilities.
Yeah, there's so many things. You could make an Oreo-O's cake. Like that's amazing.
Anything that needs like requires milk or dairy,
yeah,
it can have a cereal component to it. Wow.
Next question I want to ask you. I already dealt with the ghost in my living room playing with my children's toys. But have you, Shelley? You ever seen a ghost or experienced something that you could not explain?
I haven't. But I have been on a ghost hunting trip.
Okay, tell me everything about that. There's no detail. There is literally no detail that is too much. I want to hear everything.
Unfortunately, I guess we now know already that it was unsuccessful. But
clearly, I want to know why did you join a ghost hunting trip? What was that like? What equipment did you use? Like everything.
Well, I really honestly, I didn't want to go. This was in college. And I was hanging out with friends of a friend, and they were on many a different thing, and they were like, we gotta go ghost hunting, because that's a care they apparently believed in ghosts. And I was just sitting there like, okay, fine, let's do this thing. So we go out into like this really, really like rural part of Virginia, like this like, you know, fallen down barn, and they have like flashlights and all these other equipment, and they're like, yeah, do you see this ghost? I can feel it. And I'm just like cracking up. Like, I'm like, honestly, I'm like pretty drunk at this point. So I am like, I am cracking up and making fun of them. They really thought that they saw ghosts and everything. And it was honestly a good time because it was just so laughable because it was so fake. But they honestly believe that they were seeing ghosts and feeling ghosts. And I'm like, no, I think it's probably whatever you're on.
I love that.
Oh my God.
I wonder what, that would be fun. That would be fun to be like the drunk friend who's like watching your friends be like totally like, I see a ghost. You're like, yeah, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, can you imagine someone going on a ghost tour and just being like, no, that didn't happen. Prove it.
All right. That's amazing. So two more things I want to ask before we get to the final little thing that we call the full count, which will be fun. But two more things. First thing I want to ask is, do you have a favorite Muppet?
I guess so. Gonzo?
Great choice. Gonzo's fun.
Yeah, he's goofy and funny and weird, and he's blue and he has a weird nose, and he's okay. Yeah, Gonzo.
Gonzo's a great choice. I like that. I like that a lot. Last question I want to ask before the full count. Tell me about a time in which you laughed really, really hard. Maybe it's the hardest you've ever laughed. Maybe it's just recently you laughed super hard and tears are coming down your face. Somebody fell down. Somebody farted. It does not have to be a good story. Just you're dying laughing. What happened?
Oh, I don't know. Because I'm notorious for having like a 13-year-old boy's humor. I don't even know. It was probably Rudy said something, and it was very, that's what she said. Because I am always saying that's what she said jokes because I am lame, and anything that
dude,
he said.
No, a good that's what she said. Like a good that's what she said is pretty funny. Like, it catches you off guard and you're like, wait, what? Oh.
Go ahead.
No, you are the guest. Literally speak over me.
I kind of find it embarrassing that, not embarrassing, but yeah, I find great humor and a good that's what she said joke. So that's probably the most recent time that I've like absolutely died is Rudy said something that he shouldn't have. And I'm like, that's what she said. And we die.
I love that kind of like sense of humor with a spouse or a significant other is just the best thing. Like, it's just the best when you're just like goofy and stupid with somebody and you both just end up dying laughing because you made a dumb joke or something. It's the best.
I think the way that like The Office has permeated popular culture to the point where that's like, that's a Michael Scott joke, you know? And so I think there's kind of and this also could be like, I mean, I know we are not particularly far apart in age, none of us, but just like a slight generational thing too, where or maybe not, but where there's an understanding though. It's like when we talked about D's nuts jokes last week though, when someone makes a that's what she said joke, whoever's making the joke is aware that you're making a bad joke. You're making like I'm being a corny 13-year-old here, but it's still funny. It's like you're playing a character. You know,
well, I think that
kind of vibe with it is kind of like, I don't know, everyone imagines themselves to be Michael Scott for a second and everyone can laugh.
That's like dad jokes. I mean, that's why I love telling dad jokes, because I didn't go up to my son a few months ago and say, hey, Nate, the cows are sleeping in the yard. And he goes, what? And I say, that means it's past your bedtime. I didn't do that because he would laugh. I did it because he went, oh. And my wife from like another room goes, oh my God. I did it for that because you're putting on a character almost. You're like, yeah, I know this is a terrible joke. This is a stupid, horrible joke. But anyways,
so now I would like to,
Zach, did you have anything else?
The only other one I wanted to ask was whether was ballpark food, whether it's Korea, USA, whatever. Do you have any go-tos, any favorites, eat, drink, whatever?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Camden Yards Boogs Barbecue. I'm serious.
Yes, this is the second time Boogs has gotten a shout-out on this podcast. Boogs is great.
No, seriously, it's great. The thing that I miss the most. One of the things that I miss the most about not just Baltimore but America, you know.
You gotta like pit beef. It's pit beef barbecue. But if you like pit beef, man, Boogs is real solid, like real good. And they give you so much food. Talk about the price of food. The price for Boogs, you get good portions. You get a big sandwich, a little helmet of coleslaw. It's good.
And helmet and the chips.
It's a tiny little like plastic helmet is your bowl, and it's coleslaw. And then and you get some chips. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I mean honestly, like I would do a lot of things to go back to Camden Yards, get the Beeps Boogs barbecue, and get one of the can like Natty Bo and like a tall can, you know.
Dude, they don't have Natty Bo at Camden Yards anymore. They got rid of it. I know.
Then what do they have now?
Bud Light and yeah, I know. Natty Bo, a Baltimore brand beer, and they got rid of it at Camden Yards. It is.
That's a shame.
It's awful. Dumb. It's ridiculous. Like Natty Bo, like I'll admit, Natty Bo isn't like some incredible beer or something. Of the cheapo beers, I think it's pretty solid. I love it because it's a Maryland beer. Like you get a thing. There's a thing in Annapolis you can get at some bars. Not a lot of bars do it anymore. Called a Botini, which is it's great. So you get Natty Bo draft, and then they put Old Bay around the rim and sprinkle Old Bay in the beer, and it's delicious. It's a wonderful, wonderful
Baltimore
drink.
Folks, y'all are running out of strikes real fucking quickly. Did you just say Old Bay in
Old
beer?
Bay? Yeah.
Yeah, see, what Dogfish Head.
Dogfish Head had an Old Bay beer that was kind of gross, in my opinion.
It grew on me. It grew on me.
Yeah, I will admit I only gave it one chance, so it may have been an acquired taste. But no, the Botini, there were some bars in downtown Annapolis that would do it. Not as many anymore, but you could get them for cheap. There's a whole, a glass draft of Natty Bo, and before they poured the draft, they would, just like you would for like a martini or whatever, they would dip the glass, the rim of the glass, in Old Bay, and then some Old Bay would be in the drink too. And I know it sounds weird, but the thing is, if you're eating crabs in Baltimore, you probably have a beer with you anyways. You're mixing the two already. So having the Old Bay and the beer, it sounds weird, but it's delicious. It's a delicious drink. I love it. I wish more bars did it.
You know, I still got some Old Bay left on my kitchen right now.
Oh, man. It's
so good. I didn't get it myself from Maryland, but I got a friend in, Annapolis area. She's actually a journalist writing for Capital Gazette.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, her name is Catherine Fominick.
Okay.
She kind of sent me one of those like a Maryland care packages last year.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Old Bay was one of them. Yeah. And
Old Bay is essential, man. You got to have it for your popcorn. I made popcorn the other night. Old Bay on your popcorn. It is the best.
I did pick up when I was still in Rhode Island a few months ago. I got this thing of spicy Old Bay.
I mean, Old Bay is already pretty spicy. They have
it had like cayenne and other shit in it. And it was it was actually incredible. And I have not been able to find it since.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I would love to find it. I mean, you guys know that. American spicy is like nowhere near Korean spicy. So,
American spices are like salt. That's what we call spices.
Yeah, that's like the American thing. It's like, don't put too much pepper in there. I don't want it to get too spicy. Anyways, I would like to. So we're gonna pivot to the last section of this. Loving lately, or musician.
Recency bias
lately,
is
or,
fine. Recency bias, or
just an all-time great. I mean, honestly, if you're just like the Beatles, it's okay. Like you can do that.
There's a band that I've really they're based on Brooklyn. Just like a lot of bands out there, but I think there's a band called Mr. Twin Sister and
Twin. Yes, yes,
yeah,
they're great.
They used to be called Twin Sisters, and where do I start? First of all, if you know the song "The Recipe" by Kendrick Lamar featuring Dr. Dre, that song uses one of their songs, "Meet the Frownies" as the sample, as the background music.
And
2014, they came out with the self-titled album, Mr. Twin Sister, and
great album. From
the start to finish, like literally, like perfect. Like it's the texture is great, the songwriting is great, the vocals are great, the themes are great, the lyrics are great. Like I do not understand like why it didn't get as much you know, media spotlight as it should have. It's like, you know, I listen to a lot of music in general, and that album has an amalgam of a lot of really good things about different style of music.
Yeah.
So I guess like in terms of like, I haven't really just listened to the album recently, but just the first thing that I just came to mind, I guess.
No, that's a fantastic recommendation. That's a great deep pull. That self-titled album is well worth a listen.
Yeah. So in 2014, after the album came out, they opened for Julian Casablancas and The Voids.
Yeah.
So, and I applied for a press pass so I can interview Mr. Twin Sister. So, you know, I got to 930 Club, and after The Voids were done, I got to go to the backstage and talk to those guys, and you know, they were great.
That's awesome.
And I saw them several more times later. I actually went to Pitchfork Music Festival in 2015 in Chicago.
Ah, that's a classic. Wait, yeah. Pitchfork 2015? I might have been there too, actually.
Yeah, I went there. Mr. Twin Sister had a set there, and they also played in an after show at the Lincoln Hall. And they actually opened for Ariel Pink. But I actually didn't see Ariel Pink. I just wanted to see Mr. Twin
Ariel
Sister
Pink's,
perform.
Ariel Pink's a weird, like, I like his music, but he is also like a horrible human being. So
yeah,
I've heard.
What I used to hear is that he's just an asshole. He's just kind of like a douchebag. But
he
could really write songs. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
there's some sexual assault allegations out there about Ariel Pink, which he's not a great dude. Some great music, but not a great dude.
But yeah, I went there for Mr. Twin Sister. Like as soon as they were done with the set, I just went to the backstage and hung out with the singer Andrea D'Estella. She's really nice. We'll take her time to talk to you. And what was that? She was also in the Veronica Mars movie, funny enough. But that's a real fact.
Really?
Yeah. That's funny. I guess okay. In terms of recency bias, I would say I'm in a big K-pop kick right now. I'm discovering stuff that Korean people enjoyed like years ago. there's this song called. It's a band. This band doesn't exist anymore, but it's called Orange Caramel. Orange Caramel and Caramel. Yeah, and there's this song called Catalina.
Yeah, I am completely unfamiliar with that genre entirely. So
we will have to check it out.
I would recommend, but at least just watch the music video.
Hmm. Yeah,
because
for sure.
It's one of the wackiest and kind of out there music video that I've ever seen, not just in K-pop but also like in general.
That's cool. That's
so good. Orange Caramel, it was three girls is a K-pop group of three girls, and they kind of like pushed the boundaries of their stylistic. Like they kind of like borrowed a lot from the like a different Asian culture. Like they had a Chinese style K-pop song, they had like a Japanese style K-pop song, and Catalina in particular, it's from the tune is from like a Punjabi folk song.
Hmm.
So yeah, so the music itself in the song has a bit of an Indo-Indian disco style to it.
Hmm. Huh. And, oh man, and, I good. Yeah,
that's fascinating.
And the music video is it's really out there. It's about how do I put this? It's sushi themed music video.
Sushi themed. Did you hear that?
Right? Yeah.
Word.
Sushi themed music video, yeah.
I was just saying the other day, I think it was Oh, it was with regards to the Lil Nas X video that just came out. Montero, I don't know if either of you guys saw that. Call Me By Your Name. And I was just thinking, yeah, you got to see that, Ben.
I will.
I was just thinking though how like music videos are just not quite as creative as they used to be, because they used to be such a powerful and important and ubiquitous medium for getting artists and getting songs out there, and that's not so much the case anymore. But I was watching the other day, like I went on YouTube, I was watching the video for Bad Romance by Lady Gaga. And I was like, man, this stuff was so great. Like, this is real. Like, the creativity that you know is coming from the artists themselves.
Well,
too. The creative direction there is.
You
like,
know
I
what
feel like
killed the? You know what killed the music video, in my opinion, is hair metal, because what hair metal did in the 80s and early 90s was their music video was them playing on stage, and that was it. It was every Bon Jovi video, every Motley Crue video, every, you know, Tesla, White Lion, you name it. I say this as someone who loves hair metal more than anybody should. That was every music video was just them on stage. I mean, the closest thing you got to was like if they did a song for a movie, like when Rat did Dream Warriors for Nightmare on Elm Street 3, in which still – you had Rat defeating Freddy Krueger with the power of hair metal, which great music video. If you ever seen it, it's wonderful. It's a delight.
I'm watching this video now. I'm sorry. I'm just
Dream Warriors.
Yeah. Please do.
No. Orange car.
Catalina.
I'm not. I can't. And the sound is muted, but like that almost makes it better. I'm just imagining what's going on here.
This is great radio,
I'm sure. I'm okay. You were not lying. That's a great.
No, yeah. There's like no better way to describe this video, because it literally is sushi themed.
Yeah, they're bathing in the soy sauce as I speak, or dipping their feet in at least.
Oh,
all right.
My God.
Yeah.
All right. I'll definitely have to be watching that very soon.
But okay, this came out in 2014, and I think it was like one of those things where they might have been a little bit ahead of the time for more people to appreciate, but they were still pretty big.
Yeah, and they've got like the outfits coordinated to look like actual fish and stuff. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I was talking about. I love this. I'm about to go down a whole rabbit hole of like K-pop music videos now.
Of luck on that one. Let's get to the final category. The final category.
But before that, I will say that.
Go ahead.
I had a gig, and when I was in DC, I used to DJ K-pop at clubs in New Street. Yeah. That's a whole nother story, but it was me and like three other American friends. Like I think they just kind of added me as like to add like a Korean cred, but I got to go to backstage. I got to get like drink tickets at being a performer, and it was fun.
That's amazing. That sounds awesome. All right, so the final category in which we will ask for a recommendation. The category is miscellaneous. Miscellaneous. So anything from your life. I know it sounds complicated. It sounds difficult. But it's not. Anything from your life, an activity, a gadget, just something that you do, a practice, whatever, literally anything that you would recommend to other people. I've always found the first thing that pops in your head, no matter how dumb or weird it might sound, that's the one.
I don't know. Like, unless if you're married, go on Tinder.
Go on Tinder.
That's my favorite one so far.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Why go on Tinder?
I mean, I know the Tinder, like, it's very obviously it's a very superficial thing, but I haven't been on Tinder for a while, but I was like on and off between 2014 and I guess last year, depending on my dating situation. But got me to think about how I present myself, not just like online, but also offline. Like, how does the pictures that I put on Tinder like match how I actually present myself in person? How does how I describe myself in my bio, like come out, like sound like, because I've always been one of those people like who wrote like a little bit of a paragraph about myself. I was never really a big fan of like putting nothing on bio.
Yeah.
I also like thought a lot about like, because like guys are always expected to be the people like, you know, that start the conversation. Like, oh, it's always kind of like made me just not really be as nervous and just like, or try to like not be nervous and just like, you know, break the ice and just try to make a conversation based on what I can infer from other person's profile.
I think it genuinely did
I guess made me like a better communicator, better, like not as awkward when I'm meeting a person for the first time, in different contexts, like not just when I'm meeting someone from Tinder, but also in real life, you know?
Yeah.
And also like, I guess like how to read bullshit. But seriously though.
Yeah, for sure.
That's facts.
Because when you're like talking to someone for the first time online, like there's a lot of like, you know, you gotta really give them or the best impression of yourself. And sometimes there's a lot of bullshit. So. No, you gotta know how to read. You gotta know how to read it. And I don't know how to instruct a person on how to read bullshit, but I think it's something that you can learn intuitively through those experiences.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a great answer. I love that.
I'm like really genuinely sad that came at like 2 hours and 32 minutes
to the
podcast. That was such a great line. That might be my favorite. That might be my personal favorite full count answer we've gotten so far.
That's brilliant.
And honestly, like I actually made some friends from there as well. Like I know that might be a little sad to say, but
I've heard of like, people using Tinder to find friends. That is absolutely a thing.
And it's also totally, I feel like that's totally normal when you can start out talking to somebody with some kind of like flirtatious or romantic intent and then it doesn't really work out, but you end up being friends. That's fairly normal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's been the case for me for a lot of the times in Korea because in Korea you have a lot of people who just came from America that don't know anyone in Korea, so they go on Tinder as like one of those last ditch effort to find someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And I have a friend that I actually met on Tinder. Her name is Hannah, and she's from Atlanta area, big Bulldogs fan, Braves fan, or whatever. And yeah. I met her like 3 years ago through Tinder, and we ended up being pretty good friends. We ended up going to a lot of baseball games together because she's also really into sports. And we still keep in touch, and
that's awesome.
There's also a few more people that I stayed in touch with and throughout being friends and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but I wouldn't really recommend Tinder to everyone else. Even if you're not married or in a relationship. But,
yeah, not me. I've been, as someone who has been married since 2012, I never got to try out the Tinder thing. So
that's fine. But if you're single, or if you just want to make friends, or if you want to kind of like, I would recommend it to someone who not necessarily looking for dating or interaction with, you know, romantic interest. Like, it's something that I would recommend to someone who's maybe willing to like break out of their boundaries and just talk to people online. Obviously, like, just they're happy stories. So.